We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish, our guest, David Hirschberg. He's the author of another novel, a new one called Crossing the Bronx. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you very much for having me back.
It's a pleasure. So we tend to idealize Jews as hardworking immigrants who came up from nothing and all became Nobel Prize winners. That is not what this book is about.
No, this book is about working class Jews in the Bronx in New York. And it's not just Jews. It's also Italians and Irish, right, and Blacks and Puerto Ricans. And it is a really in-depth look at what life was like that people don't actually think about much anymore. It's very different from what you just described.
You know, we don't really remember. I mean, obviously, people that grew up in it can kind of still remember. But those of us who weren't raised in it don't realize just quite how, I don't know, claustrophobic that community could be. And as you said, multi-ethnic, and boy, a lot of corruption. Tell us why you decided to write about it.
So I wanted to write about Jacob and Esau. I've always been fascinated with the story in Genesis.
It's a good story, by the way. That's a good choice, I have to tell you.
and I wanted to update it. And so what I wanted to do was create it a little bit differently, whereas maybe it's the Jacob character that does something a little bit odd as opposed to just the Esau character. And I wanted to bring it into today, but what I didn't want to do was to set it in the today, literally today in the 2020s or the 2010s. If I did that, the folks on the left would say I'm on the right. The folks on the right would say I'm on the left. It would all be partisan. So by stepping back and putting it about 70 years ago in the Bronx and in a working class environment, which most novels that deal with Jews do not deal with that milieu, I thought would be a fascinating story. And I use that as the basis. It's not the narrative arc of the novel, but it is the basis on which the relationships are established and then destroyed and then tried to be put back together.
This really serves as a completion of your trilogy with My Mother's Son and Jacobo's Rainbow, doesn't it?
It does. My Mother's Son was predominantly the 1950s and a look back to the early part of the 20th century, and it focused on 1952 and the corruption involved in the race where John F. Kennedy ran for the Senate and how the Jews were involved in that. And Jacobo's Rainbow was in the 1960s in a fictional setting in New Mexico that dealt with free speech and campus issues and campus riots. And what I did there was I purposely set it in a place that was not San Francisco or Berkeley, because for the same reason I mentioned a minute ago, I didn't want people to say, well, I was there at Berkeley and this didn't happen, even though it was a novel. So I set it in a fictitious university in New Mexico. This does complete it, because I think what it does is it gives an entire setting for what it was like to be Jews in America after World War II. And it's very different from what it is today. And there are some important lessons, I think, that we can learn in that environment. It's often been called the golden age of Judaism in the States from the 1950s to about 10 years ago. And now maybe the gold is not quite as shiny.
We will talk much more about that, not only about the lessons, but also dig deeper into the book with David Hirschberg when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, David Hirschberg, is the author of a terrific new novel, Crossing the Bronx. Gritty, interesting, but also a good read. He is, I think it's fair to say, a second career novelist, or I don't know, maybe it's your third career. He has two previous novels, My Mother's Son and Jacobo's Rainbow. This is his third visit here on Two Jewish. In digging into this culture and a little bit more about the environment, you know, I was reminded a little bit about the way Saul Bellow wrote about Chicago. Like there's a kind of a muscular quality to the whole thing. Did this come out of personal experience? How did you dig into it?
So it's interesting. It did not. And the only time I've been in the Bronx, I live about 30 miles north of the Bronx is to go to Yankee Stadium and the Bronx, right, the Bronx right. Zoo and the Botanical Gardens. So it's not something that I had from experience, but I was close enough to it and had so many friends from the area that I thought it was the right setting. What I was looking for was a situation in which a community was literally destroyed by eminent domain, in the kind of post-World War II euphoria that city governments could do just about anything. And they destroyed a section of the Bronx by creating this Cross Bronx Expressway, which is how I get the title Crossing the Bronx, which is a double or a triple entendre when there's all sorts of double crosses in the book itself. But that's what I wanted to do, was to set something up that was the story that would push it forward, the destruction of the community and the people in the community. And the Jacob and Esau is the family story of how the brothers, who are on opposite sides of this issue, how they fell apart, came back together. And then there's a question at the end, will they stay in a relationship or not? Which is, if you go back, as you well know, to the Jacob and Esau story, it's the same kind of thing. We never know in the end what really happened after they met that last time.
Boy, the relationship between these brothers couldn't be much worse, could it?
At the outset, it couldn't be, and it stems from the fact that their father was a tyrant. And I don't want to give too much about the father.
No spoilers because, here, please.
Yeah, no spoilers. But I would like to read something, if it's okay, a short paragraph.
Please, yeah.
And it relates to the fact of how I introduce characters. So I don't say they're 6'4" and they weigh 210 pounds and have green eyes. By the way, I should tell the audience that because it's the gritty working class Bronx of the 1950s, it is colorful language. So anyone with sensitive ears may not want to hear this paragraph. But this is how I describe the father. And from this, you can understand how one brother associated with him and the other brother rebelled against him. My father was a Dago Jew, more Italian than Hebe, di Venezia from the original ghetto. Orphaned, which may explain his lust for acceptance by those in power and his rage when he beat the shit out of me. Or maybe not. Let's face it, I'm not the shrink. He was the only Jew in an orphanage with 100 Catholic kids, and it was his good fortune that he had the physical characteristics to stand up for himself. At 12, he pried a crucifix off one of the walls and used it to pound the daylights out of a kid 4 years older who taunted him in front of others on account of his circumcised dick. That night, so he said, he got rid of Isaac and became Ike, the self-described Ike the Kike. How's that for balls? And so I tried to do that with every character to give a sense of what they're like in the description of them. And then one of the sons, Eric, the Esau son, completely went along with everything his father did and became a tough hood. And the Jacob character became close with his mother, and his mother and father had an estrangement, and the family literally split apart.
The next paragraph in the book, by the way, just so it's funny that I was on that, talks about how the mother is from Azerbaijan. I just was there on a rabbinic mission trip a couple months ago. I will tell you, the mountain Jews are pretty tough people themselves. It's interesting. How did you decide on that for her identity?
So I did a little searching around, and you can do wonderful things on Google AI these days. And I tried to find, tell me a book with a Jewish theme where there was somebody from country X, and I just filled in lots of countries. And there was always something. And there was Poland or Romania or Hungary and even Armenia. But I couldn't find anything on the mountain Jews of Azerbaijan. And I thought that was one way in which I could also distinguish between the husband and the wife. One was an Italian Jew originally from the ghetto.
Yeah, the original ghetto, the genuine original ghetto of Venice.
Right, and that's how I gave him the name Di Venezia from the ghetto, from Venice. And then the mother was from Azerbaijan. And I just thought that was something that hadn't been done before, and I didn't want to retread something that everyone else has done.
Well, whenever this war is over, you have to go visit Azerbaijan. It's really quite fantastic.
And I've heard that Baku is a wonderful city.
Terrific. Yeah, it's a great place. I just was struck by it, and it's funny because it's in the paragraph just after the one you were reading and describing them. In the course of this book, I mean, neither the Esau nor the Jacob character, that's not their names in the book, of course, but neither one is clean, right? They both are pretty corrupted.
So that's really important. You've hit upon something that is absolutely critical to the book. Many, many times in novels, you find a black and a white character. I'm not talking about race or color.
Good and bad.
One is always good and one is always bad. The Jacob, the J character in the book, he's got some problems. He's not Lily White. And I wanted to make sure that we didn't just say, oh, it's obvious. Eric is the bad guy and Jay is the good guy. And Jay has some, which I don't want to give away any things, but he has many, many issues that are not things that we would endorse. Now, as he gets older and goes through the book, he sheds some of those and comes out a different character, which I also wanted to show. But in the beginning, he has some problems different from Eric's problems.
Right.
But Eric was a hood. And Jay wasn't a hood involved in schemes and bribery and murders and all that, but he had some serious issues.
Anytime you're talking about a novel and you're talking about the evolution of the characters, you have to kind of reveal some aspects of it. You know, good people don't always end up in jail. The whole relationship of corruption, the police force, the judicial system is very interesting. It sounds very New York to me. How did you research that, let's say?
So I have to say that a lot of that was not researched. That what I tried to do was to create a situation in which I could invent characters and then get inside those characters and see what I could do and how I could play with them. So I did research, for example, I wanted to make sure I didn't make any geographic mistakes in the Bronx and put a street where it wasn't, or put a political figure in a different era into the, I did a lot of research to make sure that was all correct. But in terms of what you just talked about, I didn't do any research, and I generally don't do research on that. I invent characters, and I like the characters to kind of take on a personality, and then I get involved in their personality, and I become a character when I write it.
You become a character when you write it.
I do.
Even the worst of them.
Even the worst of them, yes. So there's a, I'm not going to reveal anything, but there's a character who's a thug named Bootsy. And Bootsy's a tough character. I mean, he's not somebody you want to hang around with, and he's involved in pretty bad stuff. But when I was writing about Bootsy, I couldn't write from a point of view of being critical of him. This was not a nonfiction or a PhD thesis. So I had to become Bootsy. And what would I do if I were Bootsy? How would I behave? And I behaved in terms of writing in a very, very nasty way. And that was all very important. I do inhabit all the characters, including the women, which was very difficult to do.
I'm wondering about that. I do think that there are some guys that write women very well. There are some women who write men very well, but it's not common, is it?
It's not. And I'll tell you that if I could read a very short thing, one of the blurbs, I sent out blurbs, obviously, to people. One of them came
sure.
back from a woman who actually won a National Jewish Book Award a few years ago. And I want to read... What's fascinating is the descriptions and dialogue of the women in the story. Whether you've ever been in therapy or not, you'll appreciate Dr. Silverman's razor-sharp questions and astute comments to Jay's memories. And she goes on and on and on. But then she says, what is beautiful about David Hirschberg's women is that they're so three-dimensional, so believable, and written with empathy and love, which is remarkable given that the author is a man. I have to tell you, I left out a lot of the other descriptions that she wrote, that I wrote about women. When I saw that response, that became my number one blurb in the book. It's on the very first page, in the very first section of the first page, because it was so different. Of course, an author should never and could never tell anybody who's blurbing or doing a mini review, what to do or what to say. So, and I sent it out to about 3/4 of the people happened to be women, and only 2 of them remarked about it. But this woman, Haya, she just hit upon that and made it the substance of her review, which I thought was just terrific. And I felt very proud of myself that she felt that way, that I could write like a woman.
I want to touch base on a real person in your book, Robert Moses.
Yes.
I don't know if you read, there's a book, The Power Broker by Robert
Caro. Of course.
Caro, unbelievable yeah. book. And
yeah, Robert Caro wrote that book.
He did indeed. And it's, I mean, besides being about 4 pounds by itself, it's a great book. And Moses is quite a character. And his role in your book is significant. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I there were 4 people who I thought I could put into the book who were fairly well known, and Mayor Robert Wagner was one, and Robert Moses is the second, and Carmine DiSapio, who was the ultimate political power broker. Moses never held public office, but he was the power broker behind the scenes, and the 4th was the owner of the New York baseball Giants, Horace Stoneham. But when it came time to Moses, I had to be very careful, because there have been a fiction in which Moses' character has been a major part. And he doesn't have many lines in the book, but he's there. And I tried here's when I did do research, going back to your research question. And I wanted to try to get as much as I could about the essence of this man, how steely he was, and how close to being anti-Semitic, even though he was born a Jew and converted to
Christianity.
But I wanted to understand what drove him. And it turns out it was money and the closeness to power. And that's what he wanted. So he was not prominent in terms of the percentage of the book is not very much about him. But when he does appear, you get the feeling he's got ice in his veins. He cares about nothing except himself. He's an extraordinary narcissist. And that's how I wanted to portray him. And I think it was pretty much spot on. I have read Robert Caro's book, but I did not read it recently when I was writing Crossing the Bronx. I read it years ago when it was published.
Right, right. And that Cross Bronx Expressway plays a role in all of it as well.
It does. And it gets back to one of your very first questions about the gritty working class environment. There was a section of the Bronx called Tremont, and it was about 40,000 people. Tremont was about 3/4 Italian, and the rest were Jews and some Puerto Ricans as well. And when they drew the line on the map to connect the George Washington Bridge on the west with Long Island Sound, the New England Thruway on the right, they just went straight across, and they figured out what communities they could destroy, and because the people there had no power. And so they didn't go on a route that would have been a little more circuitous and probably would have cost a little more to build, but there were very few people along that route, and they didn't do that, because they just didn't care. They wanted to make it as fast and quick as possible. They utterly bifurcated the Bronx, destroyed this community, and destroyed the lives of the people irrevocably. And I wanted to get that across, because right now in New York, there are 4 major projects in which they would completely destroy neighborhoods. And there's tremendous community opposition and local politicians now on both sides, as opposed to just being on the side of city government the way it was 70 years ago. And I don't think any of these projects will end up, the current project, anywhere near where the original planners wanted them to go.
Funny how that works. I want to thank David Hirschberg for a great visit here on Too Jewish. His new book is called Crossing the Bronx. Where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about the book?
DavidHirschberg.com, HIRSHBERG. I like to say no C. It's not HIRSCH. And the book is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks.
Thanks so much, David.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.